It is Locked On Jazz for the 1st of August. Tony Jones rejoins us to talk about Dante Exum and his contract, his role in the season, plus Grayson Allen, Ricky Rubio, and more on the guards all coming up on the show. Are the Jazz or the Thunder the biggest threat to the Rockets? And some good Facebook group conversation all coming up on Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz. Jazz NBA Insider, this is Locked On Jazz. Follow Locked On Jazz for free on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. And remember, you can tell your smart speakers to play the podcast Locked On Jazz. All right, let's dig in a few different conversation pieces, and then Tony Jones rejoins us. Thanks for the response to day one of Tony Jones, and I'll post another podcast for you tomorrow. So to this week, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, I think we'll do that next week and probably do a live show on next. Oh, well, we won't because I'm out of town. We'll figure it out. We'll get a live show in somewhere next week, maybe on Tuesday. We'll do it a little differently. All right. Hey, interesting conversation of – you know, if the Rockets have really slipped, and I haven't run my numbers yet, but it sure feels like it with Harden, Paul still there, but the Carmelo addition is a negative, the loss of Trevor Ariza, Luke Bamute leaving, which I think is a you know, they got through the playoffs without him. He just wasn't right. And so I think people have forgotten the value he had during the regular season. But at least from, you know, the numbers I've looked at and other aspects to them, their defensive prowess was largely based on what he was able to bring them and playing kind of both at the four, switching their whole switching schemes. The problem with having, you know, Harden's not a great defender, but he's not as bad as everyone says. When you look at them last year, they didn't have a truly bad defender other than Ryan Anderson. And then they didn't play Ryan Anderson for the postseason. He played 66 regular season games and played 26 minutes a game, but they didn't use him a great deal. And then the rest of their guys weren't bad defenders. Carmelo's is a bad defensive player. They have a bad defensive player that now when you're switching, you can go get. What Bamute was the one player where their defense really spiked when he was on the floor. So I think that's a significant drop. The number on Bamute when he was on the floor was a 101.2 and 106 when he was off. The other one is Nene, and we'll see whether he can last at that level. But otherwise, their defense was just solidly good unless Ryan Anderson was on the floor. And to back that up on the Rockets, so here you had one bad defender on the whole team last year in Ryan Anderson. And when he was on the floor, their defensive rating was a 106.5. And their offensive rating was a 101.6. As great as the switching defense of the Rockets is, if you have a bad defender on the floor and you know they're switching everything, you can just go get him. And they're going to now have that with Carmelo. So I think they're going to slip. So if they do slip, then the question is, who's most available to go get him? And I haven't run my numbers. We're getting close. I usually run them right in September, so maybe I'll try to do it a little earlier. I'm getting antsy and kind of wondering myself. And the question is it Utah or is it Oklahoma City? Is it Portland? They're all so bunched together. Portland did not have a great offseason losing Ed Davis. The question to me on the Thunder is last year they were the 10th ranked offense and the 10th ranked defense. Their defense without Carmelo, I think, gets substantially better. And then their offense without Carmelo actually might get substantially better also. Their offense last year, in a year in which Russell Westbrook was really not very good. Like, I think that's not something that's been discussed enough, is that Russell Westbrook was bad last year. Incredibly inefficient. Did not have a good year at all. Was not the MVP, Russ. Was trying to figure out how he and Paul George meshed the whole time. And at the same time getting Carmelo in, and it wasn't until about halfway through the season when Russ just decided to take over and go back to being Russ that the Thunder clicked in. I think that at least my instinct, and I haven't run any of my numbers, is that the Thunder are the team that I probably put ahead of Utah as the team to go get Houston, only because I think Russ has a better year next year with efficiency-wise, Carmelo comes off the floor for them last year. Their defensive rating with Carmelo on the floor was 3 points per 100 possession, worse than it was when he was on the floor. Andre Robertson defense was a 96.4 when he was on and a 107.6 when he was off. And now he'll be back. Their other moves are subtle and okay. I don't really like Dennis Schroeder, but they probably can minimize his impact. And Corey Brewer was not a good, you know, Corey Brewer was kind of a disaster filling in for Andre Robertson. So on that kind of ongoing conversation, if Houston slips, I do see the two teams as the Thunder and the Jazz as the teams that are possibly knocking on that door. And before I run numbers and do any of that stuff, my instinct is just kind of looking at it. The Thunder were 10th offensively and 10th defensively. My guess is they finish about, and we'll see what my numbers say, 7th offensively and 5th defensively. Whereas the Jazz, I think, will probably be about 14th offensively and 1st defensively. And so those are pretty close, but I think that puts the Thunder just a notch ahead of them. I'm not sure if that's true. A good piece in the Deseret News about Donovan and his offseason and what he's been doing. And I go back to an interview I did with Donovan in the Year Star. We didn't really know him. And he said, the biggest problem I have is every time I go to a city, I want to go see stuff and go do things. And I don't want to just sit still in the hotel room, but everyone tells me I've got to rest. And this, I think that's going to be my biggest problem, which I think he's proving that to be true with his offseason. The kid just doesn't sit still, and it's great. He just got back with his mom and his sister from Shanghai, where he was put on the NBA 2K Online 2 video game Chinese cover. These are big moments, too, by the way, because what it means is that Donovan's stardom is not being restricted by being in Utah. And I think that's a really, really important note. It's Durant didn't need to go to Golden State to get famous. He just needed to go to Golden State to win. And so, or to get out of Oklahoma City. Donovan is not going to have to leave Utah to get famous. In fact, the opposite might turn out to be true for him, that Utah becomes his sanctuary where he is able to stay away from the crowds and have some peace. Whereas when he is traveling all across the world and thinks he's that big a star, if he continues to play. Good article. Nice job by Jody. Talked about altering his diet a little bit, getting ready. He did say he's keeping staying easy on that foot. So that's worth probably keeping a little bit of an eye on. And he said he's eating a little bit better. He'll be a better player next year just because that's what happens when you're in your second year in the league. And that's just maybe the most exciting thing about anything that's going on with him. Today's show is brought to you in part by The Store. This is becoming a very big debate. We are going to have a poll question on the Locked On Jazz Facebook group. And that is whether or not what I think is true, which is that the Mudslide cookie is better than all the other cookies, is true. Store's got locally grown Schmidt's fresh corn on the cob right now. They got a nice Cavita special going on. All sorts, the whole local area there is so great when you walk in off to the left-hand side with the various local companies. And then don't forget Cottonwood Ace also with the Traeger wood-fired grills. They have the entire Traeger set up, basically showroom for you, and then great deal on all of the special pricing on the 20-bag pellets. So if you want the mesquite flavor, the hickory, the maple, the pecan, the cherry, the oak, they're all there, the apple. That's over at the Cottonwood Ace that's right next door to the store. 6200 South and or 20th East. Stop by in Holiday, South Holiday Drive. It's really 6200 South and 20th East, which is Highland Drive. It's right there. It's the store. Enjoy it. Stop by. Get your Mudslide cookie. And then if you want to sample any others, let me know what you think is better. Tony Jones comes up next talking Dante Exum and the contract and his role with the team. And then part two of the conversation, Grayson Allen and Ricky Rubio. Back with our second day of Tony Jones because he's just that nice. All right, so what's your thought on the 3-year, $33 million deal for Dante Exum? I'm gonna, I actually kind of love it, but I don't want to give away why until after you've answered. What's your thought on the Dante Exum deal?
Well, I really like it because I think here's what I think about Dante. I think that Dante is a guy who has a competitive fire within, and I think that this guy wants to get better. He wants to improve, and he wants to be good. And I think that he's going to work to be good. I think that $11 million for a backup point guard seems a lot, but guess what? Dante Exum right now, today, is an elite perimeter defender in the NBA. And those elite perimeter defenders in the NBA right now are worth $11 million a year. And this is if Dante doesn't make one improvement. And he has such a ceiling for improvement. He works hard enough that I think that he's going to improve. The only question that I have is if he's going to stay healthy. That's my major question. If he does stay healthy, I am actually pretty confident that he will either play up to or outplay the contract.
So let me share my joke all offseason. I don't know if you heard it, was if I had been in the Jazz meetings and the conversation turned to Dante Exum, I would have had stomach problems, like immediately had to leave the room every time because I don't have any idea. I really don't. I'm not sure I've ever been around a player for 4 years where if you ask me what he's going to be like in 3 years, I don't actually have an answer. It could be the range is so wide and I have no definitive belief on where it is. And that's not to his fault. It's to the injuries and the lack of experience before he got in the league. So that there's still so many different things that could take place. Now, with that said, every reason he was drafted fifth is still blatantly obvious, right? You watch him for 5 minutes and he jumps off the screen. It's clear the speed, the length, the defense, all of those things are completely obvious. So if you're going to re-sign him, the point is you've got to re-sign him for 3 years with no outs. Because what you're doing is you're still committing to the fact that the reason you drafted him fifth you believe in, and you believe in him. You don't want to give him a 1 or 2 year deal and then have him leave. You still believe. And I just love the fact that there was a consistency in the decision-making by the front office. I don't know if they're right, and I'm not sure in this league when you're dealing with humans you actually know if you're right. I just like when there's a structure, a system, and a belief pattern to what's making you make your decisions.
Well, I think that there are a couple of things with Dante that really endeared him to the Jazz. I think that the way he worked to get back from his shoulder surgery, I think that was really endearing to the Jazz. I mean, he was really competitive in his rehabilitation. And he, you know, set a goal. And the first thing that Dante said was, hey, this is not going to take me out for the rest of the season. And he set a goal to get back, and he got back. I mean, truthfully, I mean, he came back, you know, in mid-March. I think he probably could have come back, you know, 2-3 weeks before that. You know, I don't know if you agree with that, but I'm just saying, just in my opinion. And I think the Jazz actually slowed him down a little bit. You know, and I think the second thing is I think the Jazz see the way he works. I mean, he worked last summer, and I think that he came back a better player. Now, obviously, the shoulder popped up, for lack of a better term. And that was an unfortunate deterrence for him. But you know, and I think that the way he works and the way he worked during the off season, the way he responded to before last season, that exit interview where Dennis and Quinn were really difficult on him, promised him nothing, and he responded. He basically did, you know, the exact opposite of what Rodney Hood did. You know, where Rodney kind of hung his head and really didn't meet the challenge of internal competition, you know, Dante Exum said, you know what, I don't care that the Jazz traded for Ricky Rubio. I'm still going to go into this thinking that I'm the starter and I'm good enough to be the starter. And you want that as a coach and as a GM. You want a guy who doesn't care what happens with the roster around him. He's going to go out and he's going to control what he control, what he can control. And I think that Dante did that. Had he not gotten hurt, I think that he would have had a pretty major role last year. And I think that if he stays healthy, I think that he's going to work his way back into that role this year.
I mean, if we remember coming out of training camp before he got hurt, Quinn had this great kind of feeling about Dante and Donovan together as this second unit, speed unit, right?
Yeah.
Now, a lot of things changed between then on all of that, so it'll be interesting to see. I've made this up in my head. I've had nobody tell me this. I've actually talked to very few people this offseason. I think they're tired of me. but I've made this up in my head that I think Dante plays the 2 and the 3 this year. That Rubio plays 31 minutes at point guard, and that the other 17 are split between Grayson and Donovan and Dante and Joe in this kind of conglomerate of guys who can handle the ball, and that Dante actually plays as much 2 or 3 this year as he does 1. Do you buy that at all?
Well, I think he's going to play a lot of 1. I think he'll play a lot of 1 and 2. I can say that I don't see him playing 3, but at the same time, I mean, I can definitely see Quinn playing Dante, Royce, and Donovan together, or Dante, Grayson, and Donovan together. I think that's the beauty of what Quinn has at his disposal this year. There's a lot of combinations that he can play, and I think that there's a lot of ways that he can go. This team is going to be really versatile. I mean, it can go big. It can go really big. It can go really small. It can go really fast. I mean, it's an elastic rubber band of a rotation that can bend a lot of different directions, and match up with a lot of different lineups that today's NBA dictate that you'll see around the league.
Let me just make sure people understand one of the things. One is I actually think that Grayson and Donovan might be more comfortable with the ball in their hand. The other one is I think as a backside option, early action happens, defense shifts, swing to Dante. He has an advantage when he gets the ball with one step. He's gone. Like that's Dante at his best, right? Maybe rather than working from the top, Dante working from a wing where somebody else has run a pick and roll on the side or had some weak side action, they've shifted over, they're coming back to Dante, and he uses his speed and length and gets on top of the cup. That's Dante at his best.
Well, I think to add a counterpoint, I think you want Dante at the top because I think that he's yet to prove that he's a shooter. And I don't want that weak side guy sloughing off in the lane, impeding Donovan's way to the basket. So, I want a lot of if Dante and Donovan are on the floor, I want Dante starting off making the initial read because I don't want his man in Donovan's lap, or at least until Dante can prove that he can be a 35% three-point shooter or a 36 or 37% or whatever, at least until he can prove that he can make that shot.
He's Tony Jones, Salt Lake Tribune. Topics on the next part of our conversation, Grayson Allen. And his second half, Ricky Rubio, Ricky Rubio you get, plus a great story about how Quinn got Ricky going. That's all coming up more with Tony Jones. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai. Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. I have driven almost the entire lineup of Hyundais, and it's just a great brand. We bought the Santa Fe, actually, for my son, who got his driver's license today. It's this car we found that we had the best safety features at the best price and big enough, and frankly, we'll use it all as a family because we got the third row seats, so we still maintain that. We got the Murdoch guarantee of car washes for life, safety inspection for life. We didn't use our five-day price match guarantee. But check it out. At 4646 South State Street, if you're looking for a hybrid, don't automatically go Prius. Take a look and compare what you might do with the Ioniq. I drove the Ioniq, was very impressed by it. Love that. The Kona is the new version of their Subaru Crosstrek. Has all the safety features on it. Fun, small, zippy SUV. And then obviously there's the Tucson and the Santa Fe. I haven't even mentioned the Elantra or the Sonata, which are their sedans. Just every time I've gotten into one of these, I've been super impressed by what they bring, what you get for the dollar value. 4646 South State Street. It's Murdoch Hyundai. What is your impression of Grayson Allen?
He is another guy in the Jazz backcourt who can dribble, pass, and shoot. And guess what? That sounds really rudimentary and really elementary, especially of an NBA player, but it is not. You know, and I think that this team is full of people on the backcourt who can dribble, pass, and shoot. With the notable exceptions right now being Dante Exum, because he doesn't really have the shooting part down. And, you know, possibly Alec Burks, because he doesn't have the passing or the shooting part down. But, you know, if you look at Grayson Allen, you look at Donovan Mitchell, you look at Ricky Rubio, you look at Royce O'Neal, to a lesser extent, you look at Joe Ingles, all five of those guys can initiate pick and roll. All five of those guys can spot up and shoot three. All five of those guys can get into the lane and do things off the dribble. And it was funny because at this time last year, I think that there was major concern of where this offense was going to come from, where the offense was going to come from, how was this team going to score, how was this team going to generate offense. And now, a year later, I look at this team as a really versatile offensive team because there are so many guys in this system who can do things with advantage basketball. And I think that the Jazz right now offensively are pretty unique, and I think that they have a chance. I'll say it right now. I think they have a chance to be one of the better offenses in the league.
Interesting. Interesting. One of my notes I had for you is what offensive changes and where do you feel the offense is? So elaborate on that. I mean, you just kind of touched about it. I think it's this whole versatility you're talking about. But all right. I'm going to play devil's advocate. They were, what, middle of the pack last year. They didn't change anyone. They're still playing two bigs, which their offense wasn't as good when they had two bigs on the floor. I'm just trying to think of reasons why I'm countering you. I'm making this up as I go. Their best corner three shooter is Derebko. He's gone. I'm begging a little bit here. So with those not very good arguments, why is it that you feel that they're – I mean, when you say they're going to be one of the best offenses, what are you saying? Like, where do you rank that? 10th?
Well, I didn't say best. I said better. Better. I say best or better?
I don't know. Are you saying 5th, 10th, 15th? Where do you think they're going
to be? I mean, I think they can be, you know, 10 to 12. If they were, where were they, 14th or 15th last year?
Yeah. I mean, and obviously dominant defensively.
I mean, so, you know, I think that they can be 10 to 12 this year. So you look at where – look at the – you know, maybe I'm speculating here, but I think that the chance for individual improvement within the offense is significant. I think Donovan is a significant chance. Donovan is a better basketball player than he was last year. I think there's a significant chance that Royce O'Neal is a better basketball player than he was last year. Same thing with Dante Exum. Ricky Rubio and Jay Crowder.
That's a big one. Let's stop right there. Do you think that's for the first time in 6 years, Ricky Rubio will have the same coach when he goes to training camp?
Yes, and I think he has a chance to be better.
And so second half of the season, Ricky Rubio, we've forgotten. Ricky Rubio's opening month was one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen. right?
It was terrible.
The ball was going all over the gym. It was weird, right? It was like, I mean, I'm calling people in Minnesota, like, did you ever see this? They're like, no, this is not what we saw. So Ricky Rubio's second half of the season, do you think a whole season of that for the Jazz?
Well, here's the thing, and this is what I say. I think Ricky Rubio holds the key to the Jazz. If you get Ricky Rubio, the second half of the season, Ricky Rubio, and I've gone back and rewatched a lot of the second half of the season. If you get that Ricky Rubio, then this Jazz offense is going to be fine. Whether it be 8th, 10th, 12th, you know, because, I mean, obviously some of these numbers are subjective. I just think it's going to be fine because he was so good in the second half of the season, and he was so good at not only, you know, he protected the basketball. He stopped throwing it all over the gym, but he was so good at running the offense in the second half of the season, but he was also so good at making himself a scoring threat. And he did it consistently that if that is who he is next season, then this Jazz team is going to be really, really good offensively. And obviously, defensively, it's one of the top three defenses in the league. And this Jazz team is going to win a ton of basketball games.
I don't know if you've heard this story, but this is one of those things where being embedded with a team and being around it, I think, is really fascinating. And you may already know the story, Tony. I'm going to share it with you if you share it with everyone. So the Jazz lose in Atlanta, and the whole season turns the next night when Ingles gets the inbound pass from Rubio, lays it up, they go to overtime, they win, and everything changes. But the whole season really might have changed in the off day in Detroit. So Quinn Snyder goes to lunch that day, and then I'm assuming Quinn does everything on purpose. Quinn comes back from lunch and is sitting in the middle of the lobby of the hotel we stay in, a nice old kind of Detroit hotel. And the players have a players' meeting with the players' union that day. As the players are all walking out, Quinn is sitting on the couch in front of where all the players are walking out, right by the elevator. About 7 players, including Ricky Rubio, are about to board the elevator. And Quinn Snyder says to Ricky Rubio, now, if you recall, the night before in Atlanta, Rubio takes like 6 shots in the first quarter, misses all of them, and Quinn pulls him, right?
Yeah.
It's like the low moment of his career. His 6 previous games are 3 of 11, 1 for 7, 2 for 8, 6 for 11, 3 for 11, and 1 for 8. He's a mess. Snyder says to him in front of all of the main guys, hey, I rewatched the first quarter. All those were good shots. My bad. I shouldn't have taken you out of the game. Shoot him again. The next 31 games, he shoots 46% from the field, 44% from 3, and 16 points a game. I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, but it's also the next night in Detroit that he gets hit in the face, is bleeding, has stitches, and comes back out to finish the game while some other guys on that team at that moment weren't as invested. And you just wonder, like, is that the essence of what Coach of the Year is right there? That moment on that couch where I'm guessing Quinn knew everyone was walking out, and I'm guessing Quinn knew he was going to make a public apology to Ricky in that manner. I mean, I don't know that, but I'm guessing that Quinn doesn't do anything by accident.
Quinn Snyder last year became the first coach of Ricky Rubio's career to empower Ricky offensively. He was the first coach who said, you know what, I don't care that you're missing shots. Say, shoot the basketball. He was the first coach who said, you know what, you know, if you're on the perimeter, I want you taking that open shot every time. If you remember the second Minnesota game, the first Minnesota game that at Vivint Small Home Arena happened early November, and that night, I think it was a Monday night, and Minnesota just absolutely destroyed the Jazz. You could hear Tom Thibodeau's voice whenever Ricky Rubio got the ball on the perimeter, and he was saying, leave him, leave him. You know, like, you know, he was showing, like, he was showing them very, very little respect.
It felt personal, didn't it? It felt very personal.
Yeah, it felt very personal. A lot of disdain there. And I think, you know, that was a metaphor of sorts for Ricky in the first half of the season. And I think that Ricky had to mentally get over a lot of of what happened with him and Thibodeau in terms of how Thibodeau wanted him to play, how Thibodeau didn't want him to shoot the basketball. And, you know, I think, you know, without talking to Ricky and without knowing this completely, but I think that, you know, there was a lot of, I'm taking these shots, but should I actually be taking these shots from Ricky Rubio? And, you know, over the course of the season, you know, the coaching staff had to embed into Ricky, you should be taking these shots. You can make these shots. And if you look at Ricky Rubio over the second half of the season, he was one of the better point guards in the league on both ends, because on offensively he started playing with a lot of confidence, and defensively, where he was really bad in the first half of the season, he stopped gambling, he stopped reaching, he started moving his feet, he started staying in front of people, and he started stopping people. I mean, what Ricky did to Westbrook, Russell Westbrook, in those first three or four games, I mean, it was terrific in the way he played Westbrook to a draw and maybe even outplayed him. I mean, that game three, his first half in that game three, won the Jazz that game. He made huge shots in the second half of game two, that along with Derek Favors that won the Jazz that game. So he really became an intricate part of this team as the season went on.
He's Tony Jones. We have so much to talk about. We're going to talk more, and it's going to be on the next edition of Locked On Jazz.